If you like tennis betting, William Hill offers the best in-play action you'll find. You can bet on the outrights, sets, games, and point by point. To guide you, there are stats, a court map, live action on William Hill TV, and dedicated experts looking for the best bets on the ATP and WTA tournaments on in-play radio. Plus, there'll be extended radio coverage of the Grand Slams. To get involved, tweet the studio at Will Hill In Play or email inplayradio@williamhill.co.uk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along. Good to have you with us here. It's the tennis podcast, the William Hill Tennis Podcast, looking ahead to the Australian Open, a fantastic 2 weeks coming up down under. Dave Kellner here in the studio with Sky Sports commentator Nick Lester on the line to look ahead to the first Grand Slam of the new tennis season. First of all, a warm welcome to you, Mr. Nick Lester. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm very well, Dave. Good to speak to you as always. And lots to look forward to in the new year. It's been a good start. Lots of different players have kind of reared their head early doors. And as we were just saying a moment or two ago, I think the Aussie Open, you know, it hits you with a bang. It's the perfect time of year. And there's some, you know, there's lots of good stories this year.
And you're flying the other direction for the Australian Open, Nick. You're going to be commentating for ESPN stateside.
Exactly. Yeah, I go there tomorrow morning. So flying over to LA, and we have a really good team of people over there. So we're doing the first 9 days of the tournament this year and commentating on for American TV. So can't wait.
Let's start by looking at the men's side then, Nick, first of all. And Novak Djokovic is the 10-11 favourite. Roger Federer, 11-2. Andy Murray, 7-1. Rafael Nadal is 8-1. Kai Nishikori and Stan Wawrinka are both 14-1. Grigor Dimitrov is 25-1. And it's 40-1 and bigger price as the rest. We'll start with the Serb, Novak Djokovic. Odds on for the title. Made a couple of slam finals last year, Nick, and won 7 titles, including Wimbledon. There's a lot of talk at the moment about the diminishing influence of the Big Four, but Djokovic has a tendency to find his best form early on. Winner here in 2011, 2012 and 2013, and lost to eventual champion Stanislas Wawrinka last year. He seems to have the ability, Djokovic, to turn it on in the early part of the season.
He does, and I think that's largely because conditions suit. I think primarily, I think it's a fairly high bouncing surface, as we know in Australia. It's fairly slow for the most part, despite the fact, obviously, it is pretty hot over there and the ball does tend to fly. And you're right, he has very much enjoyed conditions. I think it probably is overall a defensive man's court because the balls do tend to fluff up a touch and they get a little bit heavy. So I think that's primarily why he's enjoyed it. He hasn't made a particularly good start to the year. I would certainly, though, put that little mark down as an asterisk. Obviously, a tough defeat for him in Doha. He lost to Ivo Karlovic. But, you know, Djokovic has at times, certainly over 3 sets, struggled against guys with big serves. You know, I remember a couple of losses to Isner he's had. He struggled a bit against Raonic. So I don't think there's a great deal to read into that. He had a slight illness as well earlier in the very first event he played in the year when he was forced to put it against Andy Murray. So I think going in, it hasn't been ideal, but there's no doubt for me, Dave, he has to be the man to beat. His record speaks for itself there, and I think he's certainly, he's the right man to be a favourite.
I suppose the only negative is the price. Odds on at 10-11. He's got a decent draw as well, hasn't he, Djokovic? Avoids Federer, Murray and Nadal. It's a good draw for Djokovic.
Very good draw, yeah. Qualified to start with, and then as you say, Verdasco, Isner, Bautista are all good in that little section. Neither of those, any of those players are particularly in good form. Monfils is in there, but as we know with Gael, it's utterly impossible to get a feel of where he's at, so I'm not even sure he's going to start the event. One man who's been playing very well in his top section there is Milos Raonic. He's been playing very well, and I'm sure we'll touch on him in a moment, but I've been impressed with the way he started the year. He's improving again. I think he's improved from last year from what I've seen of him so far in 2015. But you're right, the draw's ideal for Djokovic. It'll certainly get him going, I think, early doors. And he has to be a favourite. Whether 10 to 11 is a little bit short, I think it probably is for my money, Dave. But he's in the top half. He's certainly, I think, where he will have certainly looked at the draw, and he will have been happy with where he sits.
Roger Federer is the second favourite, Nick, at 11-2, won his 1,000th match on the ATP Tour and another title in Brisbane just last week. A couple of years ago, Nick, I was stupid enough to write Roger Federer off. He's not won a slam since Wimbledon 2012, but his recent play suggests there's one more biggie in him, maybe, Roger Federer. Just to put that into context, that 1,000th win, he's only the third player to hit that mark in the Open era. Jimmy Connors and Evan Lendl, the other two. This guy is obviously a great of the game, and in some ways transcends the sport as well, Roger Federer. Just an incredible talent, and his 1,000th match, his 1,000th win on the ATP Tour, incredible numbers.
They are, and you know what's even more amazing? He wins the Sportsmanship Award every year. He wins the International Tennis Writers Association Ambassador Award every year. So he doesn't just do it on the court, but he does it off the court as well. Yeah, you can't speak highly enough of the guy, Dave. I'm lucky enough to travel the world fairly regularly throughout the course of the year, and wherever you go, it doesn't matter which part of the world you're in. There's only one guy everyone wants to see, and that's Federer. And as we've bashed on about it a lot over the years, certainly on this podcast, and I think it's probably it's two reasons. I think it's one, the way he plays the game. I think aesthetically, it's the most pleasing style that people love to see, the artistry in him. There's no doubt about that. And I think the way he holds himself. And I also think, Dave, as well, you know, something that we don't touch on that often is how healthy he's been able to stay. I mean, you know, we sit here week in, week out, we talk about injuries to Nadal, Murray, Ewing surgery, Djokovic having a couple of issues here. Federer never misses an event. You know, for him to put out of the World Tour Finals last year was you know, when he was unable to face Djokovic on that occasion, was unheard of.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, we take it for granted. Every Grand Slam he turns up. He set a record last year, I think, in Australia. I think it's, I want to say something like 64 or around that number, majors in a row. So his ability to stay healthy is something that he looks after himself so well. The only thing I will say about Federer is you cannot get away from the fact, Dave, that at 33 years of age, for him to win a major now would be taking him into new ground. I mean, I had a look a moment or two ago. Connors won his last major, I think, at 31. It is almost, I want to say impossible is the wrong word, but it is very, very, very unusual for a player to win a major age over 32. And if Federer's going to do it here, it's going to take a good effort.
Andy Murray is next in the betting at 7-1. 2014, Nick, a year of change for Murray, recovering from the back injury, starting his work with Amélie Mauresmo, and then the big announcement at the end of the year with the sacking of Dani Valverde, someone who's been with him from the very beginning, and his fitness coach, Jez Green. You mentioned a few moments ago that you get to travel with the tour week in, week out. How did those decisions go down in general with other people that travel with the tour?
Well, I can tell you for sure that the decision came about largely because Danny and Amélie particularly didn't always see eye to eye. I think there was a couple of issues there that the pair didn't have. They couldn't really work together primarily. And I think Danny wanted to, it was time for a change. I think Amélie, you know, sort of looked at the situation and Jez as well, and they just decided to mix it up. I think primarily it was Amélie saying, look, if I'm going to work with you, this is how we do it. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do it my way. And I think Danny had probably decided that he wanted to do his own thing as well, because he didn't get enough credit. There's no doubt about it. He did not get enough credit for the years that Murray was playing well. Lendl took all the credit. And you know what? Danny was there every single day. Lendl, of course, was there, and Lendl, you know, was probably the key factor in Murray winning Wimbledon and the US Open and the Olympics. But Danny was the guy that did the day-to-day grind. He was there feeding Andy balls every single day when Lendl wasn't around. And I think to be honest, Murray would also be the first to admit that they had a great relationship. And it's good to see that Dani Valverde has now gone on to get a job. He's coaching Thomas Burdick, I'm sure you saw.
Yeah.
So he's got a big job himself now. But to answer your question, I think it was simply a case of there were too many voices, and there had to be a change. And you know what? You said a moment or two ago that it was a year of change. It was a poor year for Murray. Let's not mince our words about it. It was a poor year for Andy Murray last year. Simple as that. His game went backwards. He didn't improve last year. So therefore, that makes this year, I think, even more important. We need to see him play well this year. When push came to shove in 2014, he produced. But it was too little too late. And I think that defeat to Federer at the O2 kind of summed it up, really. That was a kind of little, I think, a little full stop at the end of that year as to where he'd sort of ended up. And it wasn't good enough.
He likes it here, though, doesn't he, Nick? He was getting his game together a little bit at the end of last season, and finalist here in 2010, 2011 and 2013. His style seems to suit, or the conditions in Australia seem to suit his style.
Yeah, well, again, we talked about Djokovic, didn't we? How it is probably a slightly a defensive player's court. It's a court that suits players who move well because it's a touch slower. They're able to defend it a little bit better. And Murray, as you say, has played very well here over the years. Very, very consistent. In fact, you probably have to say it's been his most consistent major. And if you look at the draw, how it's panned out for him, it certainly could have been worse. There's a couple of big names in there. But, you know, he's playing well. He started the year in a positive fashion. And I think that is exactly what was required from him. You know, he needs to go back to where he was before. He needs to start hitting the forehand again. He needs to, you know, be able to step up the court, be aggressive with the forehand, because there were just times last year when he just didn't do enough with the ball. You know, and I thought that match with Federer at the O2 was a great example. He just didn't do anything. He just allowed Federer to come at him, and Federer beat him comfortably.
Are you upbeat then regarding Murray in 2015?
I'm undecided. I've always been upbeat with Murray, as you know. I've always been a big fan of his. I think he is, as I've always called him, a genius. There's no doubt about that. I'd like to be optimistic. I really would. I think this is a big tournament for him. I really do. I think it's very important he gets off to a good start here. He needs a good run at a major. He really does. He needs to establish himself. He's six in the world at the moment. He's sixth at this major. He wants to be part of that big four again.
Yes.
You know, there are guys that have improved last year. Raonic, Nishikori, Dimitrov. These three guys are snapping at his heels. They are ready to make progress again. And Murray needs to establish himself and say, I'm a major contender again, and this is what I'm all about. And he needs a good run in Australia.
Rafael Nadal, the only other man in at a single-figure price. He's 8-1. Looks a little bit rusty at the moment, Nadal. Injuries curtailed his 2014. He's already lost to Michael Barrère this season. Where's Rafael Nadal right now, physically and mentally? He's been a huge drifter in the betting market, Nick.
Yeah, and I have to say, I think he's a bit of value. I really do. And a few people might be a bit surprised by that. But I think you have to give him a couple of weeks to adjust. Obviously, he didn't really play a match last year from the summer onwards, to be honest, because he had so many issues, as you say. He had an appendicitis that he played one or two events with, and that was just silly. I mean, he was crazy to go and play in Shanghai and then made a comeback in Beijing. So he didn't really play for 6 months. So it's no surprise he's taking a little while to get back into it. Michael Barrère beat him in Doha, as you say. He did, though, win the doubles in Doha, which, okay, is only doubles, but you know what? It's match time on court, and that's invaluable. And I quite like his draw, despite what people might say. I mean, I think he faces usually in the first round. Usually he's not the player he was. He really isn't. And I think if he can get going and get a couple of wins in this particular section of his, I quite like his chances to maybe make a run of the semi-finals. He's played well in Australia as well. If they make no mistake about it, these conditions suit him too. So it's a rebuilding process for Nadal, you know. He's been here before. This is nothing new. I think the hunger is still there. That's what matters with him. The hunger is still there to play. He is fit again. So hopefully, if he can get over the first hurdle, he'll have a good run.
Okay, Nadal 8-1. Stan Wawrinka in the betting at 14-1. Defending champion here in Australia. First Slam title last year as well. First Masters title in Monte Carlo. A Davis Cup winner alongside Federer as well. 2014, really a breakthrough year for Stan Wawrinka. I suppose the question now is whether he can consolidate that in 2015, Nick.
Well, it's amazing, you know. He won 39 matches for Wawrinka in the whole of 2014. Roger Federer won 73.
Wow.
I mean, that's extraordinary numbers, isn't it? I mean, you can't quite believe it. He won a major and a Masters 1000, as you say, and the Davis Cup, and still ended up winning 39 matches. So it was an all-or-nothing year for Wawrinka. For me, he remains one of the most dangerous players on the tour. He remains a guy who can beat anyone on his day, anyone, and I mean that. And I think this is going to come down to two things. It's going to come down to how he deals and copes with being a defending champion. He is in good form, though. Again, won in Chennai again last week, played well in Chennai. I watched quite a bit of that down there, was playing big again. Biggest hitter for me in the game from the back of the court. No one has the ability to hit through players like Wawrinka does. And I think he could well have a good run here. I genuinely do. Again, the ball sits up nicely for him on these courts. Again, it's a high bouncing court in Australia. Perfect for Wawrinka because he likes the ball to be at shoulder height. He likes to be able to rip the ball from the back of the court, forehand and backhand. And I think if he, you know, again, the draw's not been too bad, really. Again, if you look at the way it's panned out for him, I think he's a semi-finalist. I've got him penciled down for my semi-finals here. And then a repeat, perhaps, with Djokovic in that final four. I think there's a lot of upside to Wawrinka. I genuinely do.
14-1, Stan Wawrinka. Best of the rest, then, Nick. We've You mentioned, I've got three names written down here, and you've mentioned all three of them. Milos Raonic, who's in the betting at 40-1, Kai Nishikori, who's 14-1, and Grigor Dimitrov, 25-1. They are leading the charge in terms of the next generation. However, none of them have won a slam yet, and only Nishikori's made it to a slam final. We've got Juan Martín Del Potro as well, making his comeback. He's 66-1. Which players can you see making a splash in this draw, Nick?
I'd probably have those three. I'd probably still go with Raonic just about, which might be a slightly surprising selection because I was big on Nishikori at the end of last year. I really was. But I saw quite a bit of Raonic play in Brisbane earlier, a couple of weeks ago, and I thought he was playing really well. I think he's made a couple of improvements. The serve, unbelievably, is still improving. I think he's starting to move forwards in the forecourt. I like his attitude, Raonic. I really like the way he approaches the game. I think he's learning all the time. He's probably got the best team in the business behind him with regards to Ljubicic and also Ricardo Piatti. So I think he's my man. The biggest issue for me with Grigor Dimitrov is still the return of serve. He still, if you look statistically, he doesn't return serve well enough. I know some very important names in the game have flagged him up as being the next major winner. They feel perhaps Wimbledon will be his best chance. But again, I saw the match with Federer in Brisbane 2 weeks ago, and he's just not winning enough points off the return of serve still. So I think that's an area he has to improve. He could well face Murray here in the last 16. That would obviously be a blockbuster. But I think those three, as far as other names for me, David Goffin had a fantastic last year. Dave, watch out for him this year. I think he's going to make some progress again. And then we've got these Australians, because I tell you what, the Australians have got at least five or six guys coming through that are big-time players. I mean, we've got Kyrgios, we've got Kokkinakis. There are three or four others who are coming through. We had a junior Australian Open winner at the US Open last year. So we've got some big names coming from Australia. So I think in two or three years' time, the Aussies are going to be flying high again. But right now, I think Raonic could be my man to have a good run here.
Milos Raonic is 40-1 in the betting. You mentioned the upside in Australian tennis. Just before we get your summary on the men's side, Nick, just want to ask you about American tennis from a men's perspective, because obviously you're going to work for ESPN in LA this week. 200-1, John Isner is the shortest price American in this field. What's the media reaction to the state of men's tennis at the moment? Is there a general disinterest, or is work being done by the USTA to rectify the situation? Because it looks dismal for American tennis on the men's side.
Yes and no. I mean, I have to say they've got some good juniors. They've got they're very good. I mean, Stefan Kozlov won the Orange Bowl last year, under 18 world champion. Francis Tiafoe won the year before. They've got Jared Donaldson, who Liam Brody beat yesterday 7-5 in the third. This kid is the real deal. 18 years of age, Jared Donaldson, coached by Taylor Dent in California. He's good. So actually, you're right. But this conversation that we're having here about the negativity surrounding American tennis has been in the pipeline for 10 years. We've been going on about it for 10 years. But actually, the future's very good. I think they've got some very, very good young players coming through. They've dominated the junior ranks. And hopefully they're going to push each other. I think that one name for me would be the one, Jared Donaldson. Look out for him because he's 18 years of age. I watched him play a lot last year. And he is very, very good.
It's ironic that Taylor Dent's coaching him as well, because 10 years ago, everyone was talking about Taylor Dent, weren't they? And he was going to make waves in the men's game.
Yeah, he had a few injuries. I mean, Taylor was a big guy. I know Taylor very well, and I've talked to him a lot about his career. He's a big guy, a big sort of strong guy. And I think I remember Taylor telling me a couple of years ago that he could never lose weight. No matter what he tried, he could never, ever lose weight. No matter what he tried, diet, running, extra physical fitness. And I think he struggled with injuries. But, you know, good player, and now obviously giving back quite a lot to US tennis.
Okay, Nick, let's get your summary then. Summary on the men's side.
Yeah, I mean, top half, I'm going to go with a Djokovic-Wawrinka semi-final. That will be my pick in the top half. And I'll go with Djokovic just to avenge that defeat from last year. So there's my pick for Djokovic in the top half for the final. I think bottom half, not quite so big on Federer. I think the draw has not been quite so kind on him. And I still think you can't get away from the fact that a 33-year-old winning a major is almost unheard of. So I'm going to go with Nadal to come through in to make the semi-finals there in that little section. And I think he may play Murray. So I'm going to go with Djokovic to beat Murray in the final.
A Djokovic-Murray final, that would be a blockbuster. That would be a cracker if we got to that stage. So Djokovic the pick on the men's side. Let's talk about the women's next. From a betting perspective, something we mentioned off-air, got a wide-open look to it this this Australian Open on the women's side. Serena Williams is the 9-4 favourite. Maria Sharapova is 5-1. Simona Halep 13-2. Petra Kvitova is 9-1. Caroline Wozniacki and Victoria Azarenka both 10s. Eugenie Bouchard is 12-1, and it's 20s bar. We've still got to start with Serena Williams, Nick, and she's 33 years old now as well. We've talked about Federer, but Serena Williams should have plenty left in the tank. She's not played as much tennis as many players her age.
No, she hasn't. You're absolutely right. But again, I throw at you these numbers. Chris Evert won her last major, age 32. Martina Navratilova won one major after hitting 33. And Steffi Graf retired at 30. So again, statistically, historically, if you back up numbers, Serena Williams, the odds are getting slimmer and slimmer for her to win a major. Now, of course, as we know, the way she's dominated the game has been hugely impressive over the years, but she's not made a good start to the year. It's been a very scratchy start of the year. Didn't play well in Perth in the Hopman Cup. Had a strange week there. Looked completely out of sorts. Now, you know, you don't read all too much, a great deal into that because she's shown it before, but I just wonder, having played a lot at the back end of last year, she went across to play the IPTL in Manila and the Philippines and all sorts of different parts of Asia. She played a lot of exhibitions in the last year. And I don't know if that's going to take its toll at some point. This perhaps, as you say, is probably the most open and exciting, I think, women's major draw we've had in a long, long time, primarily because of the players that have made their breakthroughs last year and players that have started to improve their game. So where is Serena Williams' game at? She's not my favourite for this event, despite what other people may see. I think she has a tough draw. I think there's players in there that are really beginning to emerge. And I still go back to those numbers. I think it's, you know, at 33 years of age, she hasn't won in Melbourne since 2010. She's had some tough defeats in the last couple of years. Ivanovic beat her last year. Sloane Stephens beat her the year before. These are not always conditions that suit Serena Williams, and I would oppose her certainly in this draw.
Maria Sharapova is 5-1, already has a title this year with that win in Brisbane. Whenever assessing her chance here, I remember that mullering she took in the final in 2012 where Azarenka beat her 6-3, 6-love. Maybe that's a bit unfair because she always seems to put herself in the mix in these majors. But she's not won a slam other than the French since 2008. That surprised me, Nick, that she's not got anything other than the Roland Garros title since, well, for 7 years now.
Yeah, I mean, she only won four majors. She's won one of each. So it's not as if she's been a multiple, you know, it's not as if she's been racking up Grand Slams two or three each year. But that's just the way it's been. I've got to say I'm big on Sharapova. I really like where she's at the moment. I love what she's doing with Sven Gronefeld, her coach. I think they have this fantastic dynamic relationship that works so well. Again, I know Sven pretty well, and I really like what he's doing with her. They seem to buy into each other's philosophies. Not easy coaching Sharapova either, I would imagine, because she is so focused on what she's trying to do. I mean, her ambitions run so deep. And I think Sven has been able to get the most out of her. Great start to the season, winning in Brisbane. Absolutely ideal preparation down there. Courts, you know, similar surface, similar conditions. I really like where she's at. She's healthy. The shoulder's fine now. All those issues, I think, are gone. And as you say, yeah, all right, she hasn't won here for a while and did win the French Open last year. But I just really like where she's at. And I think that 5-1, maybe definitely, I think, perhaps where I'd be laying my money, because certainly Sharapova, for me, is striking the ball beautifully. I think her mindset, her age, you look, she's 28 years of age. I think there's a lot of pointers that certainly, for me, direct in a good place for Sharapova coming into this event.
Good stuff. Sharapova in the market at 5-1. What about Simona Halep, Nick? She's 13-2, only 23 years old. She's really the one that's leading the way in terms of the younger brigade. Breakthrough season last year, particularly impressive when pushing Sharapova to the brink in that fantastic French Open final. It's her time to prove that she's an elite player now, isn't it, Nick?
Completely with you. Couldn't agree with the word you just said anymore. Shouldn't be forgotten as well, she beat Serena Williams 2 and love at the season-ending championships last year in Singapore, the last event of the year. Yes, the tables were turned in the final, but that's another result that just makes you sort of look up and think, OK, when's this now girl going to take the next level? Completely agree with you, though, Dave. wonderful player, wonderful mover, cerebral player, a little different to the others. So many upsides for me for Simona Halep, really is. So I'm putting her as my second favourite behind Sharapova here. One in China, good start to the year, perfect. One, got four matches, four wins under her belt comfortably earlier in the season in the first week in January. So comes in here in good form. Was due to play Sydney. That pulled out with a stomach bug, which, again, nothing to worry about there for me. A three seed, her form in Australia, you've got to look at horses for courses as always. Nothing out of the ordinary. I think she made the quarterfinals here last year before being completely duffed up by Sybil Kova. But, of course, Sybil Kova was on that tear last year. But I'm with you. I think Halep is a real deal. And I think she will, I'm pretty confident she's going to win a major. Be it this year or as and when, I don't know, but he's getting close to number three player in the world. Of course, what has changed is the way people look at her, because she doesn't come in here anymore as an outsider. She comes in here as a favourite. She has to deal with that sort of pressure, and that changes. Her draw, pretty good. I'd be pretty happy with her draw. Tough first round against Karen Knapp. Karen Knapp played Sharapova deep last year at this event. So tough first round, but I think if she can get through there, she is certainly, for me, my second favourite behind Sharapova.
Petra Kvitova is 9-1 in the betting, Nick. She's actually suffered some early losses here. She's inconsistent, isn't she? When she's good, she's very good, but when she's bad, she can be particularly awful. She's dangerous but erratic, Kvitova.
Absolutely. Getting less erratic, though. I think there's definitely an upside for that. Just one in Sydney, having played really well there against Karolina Pliskova in the final just a moment or two ago. Watched quite a bit of that. Does seem to be controlling her emotions better. I think probably one of the nicest girls you could meet, but probably, I think most of the players on tour would tell you that Kvitova is one of the nicest women in terms of her friendliness. Of course, friendliness counts for nothing, though. It's all about winning, and she has been doing a lot of that. She's right in the mix again, for me. Again, good draw. I think the section's worked out pretty well for her, four seed. Again, record in Australia, okay. Again, because it's a little bit slower, you do need to have players who can hit through the court. She can certainly do that. And again, I feel like I'm sort of a broken record here, but again, she is very much, we talked about the players that are in here. I would probably have to put her third favourite behind the two players we just mentioned, because she's in that section, that little top half there, where I think she should get through. Casey DeLacqua, the first seed, she should play. It shouldn't be an issue. Petkovic, she should get through there. Panetta. Venus Williams, someone who perhaps could cause her some trouble. But I think she's a semi-finalist for me. I've penciled her in as a semi-finalist. I think the way she's playing, the way she's serving, again, she's setting up the points beautifully. And she, on her day, as we know, can beat anyone. She's, I talked about Wawrinka being able to take the racket out of your hands against any player in the world. Well, Kvitova is the same. It's about whether she can do it for seven matches.
We'll talk about the best of the rest in a few moments, Nick, but it would be remiss not to mention Victoria Azarenka, who will be lurking in this Australian Open draw. The winner here in 2012 and 2013 was out of sorts for missed a lot of last season through injury. Unseeded this time round. If she finds her game, it's worth mentioning that she's made the final of four of the last six hard court slams. If she finds her game, she's going to be a danger to all.
She is. And she's had some time to reflect, which I think is never a bad thing for a professional sportsman or woman. She's had 6 months away from the game, pretty much, where she's kind of been able to sort of reflect. She lives in California. She's stayed with her coach. She's kept her team as she wished. And I think, she was a little unlucky in the first event of the year, because she played Brisbane and she played Pliskova in the first round and lost, I think, 7-5 in the third. So, the game's there. There's no doubt about it, the game's there. She plays Sloane Stephens in the first round here, which is probably the pick, I think, of all the women's first round matches. Sloane Stephens' game, though, to be fair, has been poor. She's not improved for me, for my money, certainly last year. I know a lot of people, I'm a fan of a British player who works in her team or did until last year and was fairly negative about Sloane's game. So I think Azarenka will come through that. Then she could face Wozniacki in the second round. So it's not much fun for the draw, but I'm with you. I mean, she has to be someone in there who you look at and say, well, if she can make a good run to the quarters or semis, I think that's got to be a success. Tough first couple of rounds. If she can get through there, let's be honest, she's a top five player in the world. If she can end the year top five, top six, I think that'll be a success for her, and I'm sure she'll be there or thereabouts.
We talked about the wide open field to the draw. You've got Caroline Wozniacki in there at 10-1, Eugenie Bouchard at 12-1, Agnieszka Radwanska 20s, Anna Ivanovic 25s, and it's 33s bar. just pick out a couple of other names that could run well in this Australian Open.
Garbiñ Muguruza, for me, a really good run at the French last year, improved a lot, had some fantastic runs in the fall last year, good start to the season, playing well, can only see her getting better. Elina Svitolina, Ukrainian, coached by a British man, Ian Hughes, really like the way she plays as well. She's a young player. Another player, Karolina Pliskova, just made the final in Sydney. Three players right there who, if you've got a couple of quid in your pocket, well worth an each-way bet for my money, because these are players that are going to win majors soon. Serena Williams isn't going to be around forever. Sharapova is not going to be around forever. We're looking at the next generation. We've just spent a long time discussing the women's game. Those three players that I mentioned, Pliskova, I think Muguruza and Svitolina, could well be winning majors sooner rather than later. So I think those three players to look out for would certainly be my young guns.
Glad you mentioned Svitolina. I've marked her down 200-1 on my sheet. Elina Svitolina, she's improving all the time, isn't she? And maybe a little bit too early for her, but to make a real run deep in the second week. But big game.
Big game, great attitude. I had a very long discussion with Ian Hughes, our coach, last year in the fall when I was with him on the road. Fascinating insights into her personality. Extremely driven, like a lot of the Eastern Europe players are. Very much driven by money as well, which is, you know, I think sometimes, certainly we don't always think that necessarily, but, you know, he was telling me some fascinating stuff about her and what drives her as a person. She has a sponsor, in fact, based in Ukraine, who's given her a lot of money. But he says, you know, she is so hard on herself as an athlete. If she has a bad week, she'll punish herself in terms of, you know, not spending money. It was fascinating to hear, you know, the way sort of some of these Eastern European players think. And I think she has a great future. I really do, Dave. I've seen a lot of her, like you say. So I think Svitolina would be in the mix. The only slight concern is she could play Serena Williams in the third round. Obviously, that's going to be a challenge. That's assuming Serena gets there.
Yeah, and we've seen Serena be upset in this slam before, haven't we? Ekaterina Makarova beat her. Was that back in 2012? Sloane Stephens beat her in 2013 as well. So she has been upset on occasion here.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, last three players to beat her, Makarova, Sloane Stephens and Anna Ivanovic, last three years here. So it's been there, you know, she's not dominated this tournament, perhaps as she may well have done. And I don't think it's her year. I really don't. I think there's other players that are starting to move forwards, progress. And I think they see themselves, you know, they're not quite so afraid of Serena as they once were. So, you know, I think Sharapova is my lady to beat overall there.
Okay, just a quick summary on the women's then. How do you see it panning out?
Sure, top half. I'm looking at Kvitova playing probably the best tennis of her life in that top half, coming through to make the final up there. Could well see Muguruza with a good run if she can progress to the semis. Love to see her make the semis. Bottom half, Sharapova's in that section. You mentioned Eugenie Bouchard. We haven't talked about her. Big year for her. You know, again, changing for her. She's got to suddenly play tennis. Having made the semi-finals last year, she's got to suddenly defend points. So we'll see how she goes. So bottom half, I'm going Sharapova and I'm going Halep with Ivanovic, perhaps. There's a little question mark there as well. But Halep and Sharapova to make the semis. Sharapova to make the final. I'm going Sharapova final against Kvitova, perhaps. Sharapova to beat Kvitova in the final.
Superb. Sharapova and Djokovic, if you fancy Nick's double in terms of the outrights. Djokovic 10-11, Sharapova 5-1 here with William Hill. That double pairs 10.45-1. Should be a cracking fortnight, Nick, and I look forward to picking it up with you as we go into that second week.
Can't wait, Dave.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.